And welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here on the main feed. The original podcast used to be me and Robert, then it went away because he went and became a teacher. Then it was me and David with the Raw Rundown, SmackDown with Sondra, and then Finn came in and there's a group of us, but now it's me and Sondra doing the main Inside the Ropes podcast. Hi Sondra, how are you?
Hi Kenny, I'm alright, I'm tired because there's so much wrestling and I watch so much wrestling and also have a job that I have to physically go to that I can't watch wrestling during. But other than that, it's good and the wrestling is good and...
I feel like something that's going to happen to you soon is that, like, you're not, and this is no shade intended here, you're not the most structured person in the use of your time.
Okay, but I have been this week.
You have been
like,
this
that's
week.
That's the thing. I have been really structured this week between having to
but
watch
you had double
Raw,
this week. You had double this week. That's why it was
I had double this week, and we had No Mercy. And I still have to watch retro stuff for this weekend. I have been very structured and very good about it, but it is breaking me. So...
I think what's going to happen, like, from like maybe, like, 3 weeks from now, you're going to be like, okay, I'm going to have to just, like, cordon off this certain amount of hours a week and be like, that's when I watch the stuff. Apart from that, I need time off.
Well, that's what I try to do, but then more keeps happening is the issue.
There's so much stuff.
And Tuesday I actually had off of work. So I recorded with you. I recorded a couple shows with you, right? And then in between, I was like, okay, so I can watch non-wrestling stuff. But all the non-wrestling stuff I want to watch kind of happens later in the week. So I ended up just watching Power and AEW Dark. But they were great. So I was like, you know, I mean, at least they weren't things that I technically had to watch for work. But still, I just found myself watching more wrestling. Like, I still haven't even watched Nights 2 and 3 of King of Trios. And that was a couple weeks ago. I think I'm just in a mood because I haven't gotten to watch Beyond yet. And I know that Mercedes Martinez versus David Starr is on Beyond that happened last night. And it's like available. But the time I had to watch it was only 20 minutes. And it's longer than 20 minutes on the thing because I just checked right before we recorded here. And it's a whole situation.
Well, see, I mean, mine's is different in that, like, obviously I am always podcasting at all times. But, like, the difference is that there's a lot of stuff that I would usually watch as, like, non-wrestling shows. Like, the third series of 13 Reasons Why is out, and I've still not had a chance to watch it. It's been out for, like, a month and a half. The new season of Mindhunter is out. I've not had a chance to watch that. My mum came over today, and right before we recorded, we sat down and watched the new episode of this show, Unbelievable. It's on Netflix.
I've heard good things about that. I really want to check it out and do not have time for another show.
I mean, I don't think you should check it out right now.
Okay.
I just think... I don't think it's going to offer you happiness, Sondra.
It doesn't sound like it's one that's going to offer me happiness. It's one that sounds like it's going to make me rage cry.
I mean, I've watched one episode and I'm so angry. But, you know, angry in a way that I think I needed to be made angry, if that makes sense.
Yes.
But, yeah, so there's so much stuff on and so much stuff happening. And now, like, AEW are doing a dark show. And then, did you hear what the main event of the dark show is for, like, Tuesday of this coming week?
This coming Tuesday? No.
It's, like... Cody, Dustin, and the Young Bucks against Private Party, Chima, and T-Hawk. So obviously I'm going to have to watch that.
Oh, that's going to be great. Did you see Kenny Omega versus Joey Janela? Or, yeah, it was Kenny Omega versus Joey Janela.
I did see it. I did. I thought it was good. I could have done with maybe 6 minutes shaved off of it. But I thought it was good. I thought I liked the idea of, like...
I was wondering how you felt about it.
I mean, it's not my kind of match. But I...
Right, that's why I was kind of wondering.
I appreciated what they did.
I enjoyed it.
Because I kind of wish that they had shown some highlights on Dynamite, because the whole story of Kenny Omega trying to tap into this place that he's never been before to take on Moxley is a good story, and this is a real kind of example of it, and it was never mentioned. So
it's a great story, and I love the fact, I forget who pointed this out to me on Twitter when I was tweeting about Dark, because I was watching it actually like live broadcast time, so I was live tweeting, which was fun, and someone pointed out that it was really cool that the whole story that Kenny Omega needs to kind of get back to his former self because he's been taking losses on the main roster, or he's been taking losses like on AEW, right, since he started. So he's like, he kind of has to work his way back to get there before his match with Moxley. And they pointed out that, like, he's having this match on the dark show. It's not on the main show. It's on the dark show because he's working his way to get back onto the main show. And I just think that's brilliant. Like, I think it's great stuff.
So, I mean, that's another show to add to your list. There's so much.
It's probably not going to be on my list every week. I'm not going to lie. But, like, it is really good. It's just there's so much stuff that's really good. It's a good problem to have. We're spoiled for choice. It's just, I think someone on Twitter had asked us about wrestling burnout. Like, what do you do? And when I feel a little bit of wrestling burnout, which right now in this moment I kind of have, not because things are bad, not because I don't enjoy it, but just because there's so much, like, for me, it's hard because, like, I just kind of have to step away sometimes from, like, watching a Raw or watching a SmackDown, and I'll, like, watch Beyond instead, or I'll watch Chikara instead, because then it's like, oh, I can watch this small thing that I don't technically have to cover, and I can just enjoy it, and it reminds me of how much I enjoy this. And going to live shows always kind of, like, helps rejuvenate, like, oh right, this is the best thing in the fucking world, right? Like, if I get to cheer on, you know, Danhausen at a live show or something like that, then I'm the happiest I've ever been. So unfortunately, I'm so pressed for time that I don't think I get to go to any live shows, like smaller indie shows, anytime soon, and that's a bummer, but it's okay, we'll make it.
You will get through it. There's a lot going on. We also have some new shows before the end of the year. We're going to be doing a couple of shows with Mick Foley in December, December 3rd in Cardiff, December 4th in Glasgow. It's called the Nice Day Tour. So basically, it's going to be like two shows in one. For the first hour, Mick's going to be telling some stories from the book, Have a Nice Day, Tale of Blood and Sweat Socks. And the second hour is going to be me doing an interview with him on a topic and then some fan Q&A. So it should be a pretty good show. We're excited to have Mick back. I know that when we brought Mick over earlier on this year, it was all about The Undertaker. So we felt that we were going to bring Mick back and do something about him. And if these go well, then there's no reason why we can't look at maybe bringing him back again in 2020 to go to London and Manchester, some of the other markets that people want us to go to. But if you want to get tickets, they are on sale right now at insidetheropes.co.uk/Foley. So,
I mean, I, for one, would be very interested to hear about Vince McMahon and his mind control over Mankind period of time.
As would I, Sandra, as would I. I should also mention, Finn and I will probably delve into it more on Monday when we record this week's Power Slam podcast. The ratings are in for the third week of AEW. So AEW seems to have almost retained what last week's number was. Last week was 1.018 million. This week is 1.014 million. NXT last week was 791,000 and they're down to 712,000. So make of those what you will. Finn and I will be discussing that. Interesting that AEW is kind of staying over the million just, which I guess is a good sign. I'm interested to see what they'll do post Full Gear, you know? Like, how will the fallout from a pay-per-view? Because, you know, like WWE, they tend to get quite a good number when they come out of a pay-per-view. Because people want to see what the fallout is from it. So I guess we'll see if that gives AEW a boost or not. But we watch both shows.
It does seem like it's been a pretty consistent gap between NXT and AEW every week, right? Like, it's always been AEW's over a million, and then NXT had like 800,000, and now they're like right around 700,000. So the gap has remained pretty consistent. It doesn't seem like NXT is catching up. Do you think part of that is that NXT is available on the network the next day, so a lot of people will watch AEW live because there's not an on-demand option?
I think that is part of it. I mean, the interesting thing with the rating for NXT, so AEW's first week is 1.4, and then, you know, just for generalness, the last 2 weeks have been 1 million, right? So the idea is that a million people want to keep watching it. And there was like 400,000 who didn't feel that they needed to add a third weekly schedule. With NXT, NXT went from, what were they, the week before AEW came about, I think they were over a million, I'm sure, on the first week. They were just about that. But
I thought it was like 800 some thousand the first week that AEW debuted, you mean?
No, I mean the week before AEW debuted, when it was unopposed.
Oh, yeah, then I think it was around a million. Because they did over a million for their premiere on USA.
Yes, so they did. So then when they did the first week against AEW, it was 891,000. The second week it was 790,000. The third week head-to-head at 712. So, you know, the first week they dropped a few hundred thousand. The second week they dropped another 100,000. This week they've dropped 80,000. So they're, I mean, that's not a great sign for them that things are continuing to drop. But I mean, I'm hopefully it's going to kind of even out at 700,000 or whatever. It will be interesting to see if it does keep dropping what it needs to drop to for WWE to get involved and make some changes. But you watch both shows. What show do you want to talk about first?
I don't really care which one we talk about first. I watched NXT first. That was my order of viewing.
Well, let's start in your order of viewing then.
Sure.
So, overall, before we talk about the specifics, what did you make of this week's show? What were the strong points? Was there any weaknesses to it? What did you make of this week's episode of NXT compared to, say, the first two that they've put out going head-to-head?
I thought it was another really strong episode. I loved it. Like, I'm very invested in a lot of the people on NXT. I thought Keith Lee versus Dominik Dijakovic was just incredible. And then I got super angry when Roderick Strong came in to ruin our lives in the match. So when William Regal announced the triple threat, I was like, yes, that's so exciting. I don't know. I thought there was just a lot of really strong wrestling. Like, even, you know, Tenara Conchi getting on TV is great. Kaden Carter getting on TV is great. I think that they have, you know, they have some undercard people that they're able to use to highlight other stars, which I think is great. I don't know. I really enjoyed the episode a lot. I thought it was fun. I think Shayna Baszler coming out to, like, confront Tegan Knox and just be a dick was interesting, because I feel like the women's title scene is really interesting. It's kind of all about defeating the big bad Shayna Baszler at this point. And I think that's a compelling story. And I really want to see someone just kick her in the face and win.
Yes. It's very difficult to talk about these shows separately because you end up doing comparison stuff. But, like, I think that for me, the big takeaway was that NXT is definitely, and this is funny because I didn't think this was going to be what it was. Because, you know, going in, AEW was like, we're going to be the sports-based show, right? And it was like, that's what we're going to be. But NXT is the sports-based show more than AEW is, I think. Like, NXT has just been the wrestling show. But what's interesting to me, and I'm not saying this is good or bad because I can only tell you what kind of fan I am. Mm-hmm. I think AEW is making a better job of creating stars this week than NXT was. Because if you look at, as say we do one comparison, the Darby Allin thing, right? Darby Allin took Chris Jericho, the world champion, to his limit and almost beat him, right? So, and I feel like in 2 months, I will remember that. Like, I'll remember that night that Darby Allin became, like, a big star because he almost won the world title. Whereas I think in a month's time, even though Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic, even though Regal said Dijakovic, and now it's, you know how hard I find it pronouncing that name anyway, so I don't need people mispronouncing it.
William Regal did mispronounce his name, it's true.
They had a 10 times better match than Jericho and Darby Allin, but I don't think either of them were really made stars in it, because we've not been, the problem that we've talked about for weeks and weeks, we've not been given character stuff or reasons about them for anything to happen. You know, it's not like Keith Lee got in there with, like, the world champion and almost beat the world champion and it became this big thing where you're like, wow, you know, they're in there and they've both kind of got the same problem, and that they need to be working with somebody else to feel bigger or feel more interesting. So I thought there was an interesting dichotomy of, like, Keith Lee and Dominik, I'll call him Dominik, had the way better match. Like, it was a great match. And the Darby Allin Jericho match was a lot more kind of bells and whistles, I thought. Mm-hmm. But I felt like Darby Allin came out of that far more of a star in how he was portrayed, because he, I mean, if you told me that he was going to almost pin the world champion, I'd be like, no way. But he did.
No, and I can see your point. I think I really liked the presentation of Darby Allin on AEW. It was one of my favorite things of the week, actually. Like, Darby Allin's just such a star. I am a big old fan of his. But I think I really enjoyed, like, something that undercut Darby Allin versus Chris Jericho for me is that AEW earlier on in the night ran a big, long video package versus Chris Jericho, and didn't even mention the fact that Chris Jericho might not be the champion at that point. It was just, it was very set in stone. Chris Jericho versus Cody is going to be happening. It's a big focal point of Full Gear. It's the main event. It's the biggest deal in the world. And that, for me, kind of undercut the fact that Darby Allin and Chris Jericho was even happening, which maybe feeds into the story of underdog Darby Allin. But still, I was kind of like, I would not have run that video package there the way that they did. Whereas with Keith Lee and Dominic Dijakovic, they actually built that match up more by having Velveteen Dream get attacked earlier on in the night on NXT, and then they had the number one contendership for the North American Championship on the line in Keith Lee versus Dominic Dijakovic. So it wasn't just the story that's been working for me, that's been working better for you, has been like, which one of us is superior, which one of us is the better big man, which one of us is actually going to reign supreme over the Haas division of NXT, right? It had an added stake because the winner of the match gets to face Roderick Strong. So when Roderick Strong comes in to ruin our lives and the match, it's really upsetting because I really wanted to know whether it was going to be Keith Lee versus or Dominic Dijakovic in the match. And now it's going to be both, and I'm so excited for that match because I think it's going to be real good. And maybe there's just still kind of on their journey of making them into stars and characters a little bit more. Like, for me, Keith Lee just stands out as a force of nature, and he is a character to me, and I just love him so much. I think Dominic Dijakovic hasn't done as much to kind of like hook in the audience, but Keith Lee is just always so charismatic, and I want to bask in his glory forever, and I just love him. So, I don't know. Like, it really works for me. I think Darby Allin was made more of a star, but I think the storytelling on NXT was also super solid.
I think, like, I mean, I've never been to a PWG show, but I feel like NXT is kind of developing that PWG-style crowd. Like, that's kind of what they're offering in terms of their matches mm-hmm. and stuff. Whereas AEW seems to almost be, and they're not saying this, but I'm from watching it, it seems to be like, you don't like Raw? Want to see that kind of thing done a different way? Here's what we're going to do. Like, that's, it feels like they're very different shows, which is why it's hard to kind of compare them sometimes, but because WWE insisted on putting them on at the same time.
Right,
and
yeah.
We're now kind of in this place. But anyway, let's get into NXT. It was a good show, which is always good to be able to talk about. We kick off the show with Tommaso Ciampa's returning as Angel Garza. Match goes about 3.5 minutes. Big pop for Ciampa. He's back 6 months after his injury when it was supposed to be a year.
Which is insane.
It is insane. I really hope that he's back and it's not one of those kind of like, because neck injuries are rough, because like Steve Austin and Edge and a lot of people came back from neck injuries and they were on borrowed time. So I'm hoping that's not the case with him. I mean, he looked really good. He was moving around really well. So I'm glad to see him back. I'm curious what they're going to do with him. I know he's kind of, you know, Undisputed Era came out after the match and they kind of surrounded him, but then retreated. So they're obviously maybe going to set up Adam Cole and Tommaso Ciampa. But it was good to see him back and good to see him get a decisive win. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it was a decisive win over Angel Garza. And I think NXT seems to be taking a different approach to AEW when it comes to introducing new talent. Like, I think AEW has taken a few select people that they're like, okay, you might not know who these people are, but we're going to push them to the moon. Whereas NXT, and I think this is really displayed on this episode, NXT seems to be having people put into your consciousness, like lower card people, to highlight the stars that they have so that they can make bigger stars and then, like, in future probably bring up more people. It's a different system, and I think both work and both are valid. I liked Tommaso Ciampa versus Angel Garza. Angel Garza has charisma for days, and I adore him, and I love the fact that he does a gear reveal in the middle of his matches. I love his smile. I love his cockiness. I love everything about him. And of course he wasn't going to beat Tommaso Ciampa. And it's good to see Tommaso Ciampa get a decisive win. He needs to get a decisive win. Like, that needs to happen because he's Tommaso Ciampa and he's a big star. And he does seem to be kind of in talks with Adam Cole for title contention, potentially. It seems like there are a lot of people surrounding both the NXT women's title and the NXT men's title right now, and I like that because it feels like the title is very, very important, and it feels like everyone wants a chance at it. And both titles are being held by big bad, you know, dick bags, right? So you want to see them
defeated. Big bad dick bags.
Yes. I stand by it. It's an accurate description. But I love that. Like, I love that Tommaso Ciampa is coming for Adam Cole. I love that Finn Balor is also coming for Adam Cole. I love the fact that multiple people want this title because it's so important. And it makes NXT feel like the fully formed world that it is because, you know, why would only one person be talking about this prestigious, prestigious prize?
They're making it feel like a thing. Ciampa and Cole would be a big match for NXT. So, you know, there's a weird thing that's happened when I'm watching the show, and I don't know if this is just me, but like, I'm finding it quite difficult to like settle with NXT right now, in the sense of like, because the show is now completely changed in what it is, mm-hmm. but it's being presented in the exact same way. And it's like,
what do you mean? Like,
so like, it's no longer a developmental thing. It's supposed to be, it's a third brand. It's supposed to be like, you know, this is now a third brand, but it's still presented in the exact same place, the exact same way, the exact same aesthetic as the version has been for the last few years. And
I guess for me, it hasn't felt like a developmental brand for the past few years anyway. So it feels like it's still NXT.
But for me, it feels like the exact same thing that it was before. And I'm not sure, maybe that's what it is. Maybe I thought...
I think it is the same thing as it has been before.
Yeah, maybe I thought it was going to... Because, you know, earlier on in the year, I was kind of like... I was a little bit kind of staled with NXT. So I was kind of hoping that maybe this would provoke some changes in some stuff. I don't know. It's not working for me as well as I'd hoped that it would so far. But I think that's because we talked earlier about they are focusing very heavy on wrestling. And I tend to like more angle-based stuff. And they've not done that much of that in the last couple of weeks. But they did, later on the show, we do see the Undisputed Era and Velveteen Dream thing, which is cool. But I don't know. I'm enjoying it. Like, it's a good show. I'm just not... I think of the 3 weeks that they've been on USA yet, I've not felt like... jump out of my seat excitement yet. And
that's fair. I mean, it's more a show that's aimed at fans like me than it is aimed at fans like you, and I think that's perfectly valid. That you're not like, I'm not gonna be like, you have to love this thing that I love, you know. It's not like you're shitting all over it, it's just not like presented for you exactly. But I really liked the angle stuff that they did here too, because they had Undisputed Era come out and confront Tommaso Ciampa. Mauro Ranallo pointed out that Tommaso Ciampa had his chair and his crutch, and that he could do dastardly things with his chair and his crutch. And then Roderick Strong, or was it, I can't remember who tossed the USB drive. Maybe it was Kyle O'Reilly, but someone tosses a mystery USB drive to Mauro Ranallo, and they're like, can we get this to the truck? Oh my goodness, what's going to be on this mystery USB drive? It could be anything. And I was so hooked. Like, if I had been watching with commercial breaks, you better believe I wanted to tune in after that commercial break to find out what was on the USB drive. This is the equivalent of delivering mystery paperwork. I need to know what's going on, Kenny. Like, you know that I'm a sucker for paperwork and mysteries.
You do love paperwork. No, it is a good show. I think for me, it's more just like, because it was going to be like a war, I was it feels like we're watching two very different things. And one is, like, the AEW one is more my kind of show mm-hmm. than this is. So it's hard that I'm trying to not be, you know, I'm trying to, because, for example, I feel like, you know, it's like Ciampa and Cole and Gargano, like, I've saw these guys 6 months ago. And I mean, Ciampa's a babyface, that is
new. You haven't
seen
Ciampa and Cole?
No, but I mean just the guys in general. Like, yeah. it's the same... for the most part, same guys. And then I guess for me, because the newer guys like Lee and Dijakovic haven't worked so far, that's where I'm kind of struggling a little bit. But there is good stuff. And I think that one of the things I'm trying to cover in these shows is so annoying, because if I'm ever like positive to AEW, people are like, you're working for Cody, so you're just saying nice things about him.
Oh, just tell them to fuck off.
And then if I'm ever nice about WWE, they're like, oh, you're just working with them. But like, I think the thing that NXT are doing that is way slaying over AEW is the women's division stuff, which we'll get to, because they just have a much better women's division, much better women female wrestlers, and, you know, they do focus more on it. So I think that's mm-hmm. one thing they definitely have going over them. But as Undisputed Era commit post-match, they had the whole USB thing, and we see the footage, and it's Undisputed Era backstage threatening MD that gets in their way. They show Velveteen Dream sort of beat up over a like rigging box thing.
He's like laying on a box. He looks as though he's been murdered.
He does. He looks like he has been. He looks like he has passed on. And you know, Roderick Strong's ripping his shirt. He steps in the glasses. They're telling Balor and Ciampa that the same will become of them. So, you know, they're making strides. The angle was good. I think Velveteen Dream actually is it with legit injury. So,
Is he? Okay.
I don't know how long he's out or whatever, but he is out with something.
Well, that's a bummer. I hope that he's not out too long. But yeah, I mean, this was interesting. I was wondering if the injury was legitimate because but I think they handled it well. Like, turning Keith Lee to the number one contender or the North American title is great. I think this shows the strength of factions that, you know, AEW obviously has the Inner Circle kind of running things on their show, and the Undisputed Era is kind of running things on NXT. And I think it just shows that factions really, really work with storytelling. I really enjoy this because Adam Cole is the champion. Roderick Strong is the North American champion. So you have all of the guys beating up Velveteen Dream after all of the guys confronted Tommaso Ciampa. And I know that we're leading to NXT War Games, so I wouldn't be shocked if there's, you know, War Games stipulations ahoy with Undisputed Era again. Not my favorite match style, as we know, but it makes sense that they're trying to, you know, build alliances and things like that leading up to War Games. I love this. I really, really love it. Except for the fact that Velveteen Dream is injured. That I don't love. But I think Undisputed Era just being dicks, I really want them to get retribution. Like, I hate them. I think they're so, like, such scumbags, and I want to see them get kicked in the face.
That's the point. If they're doing that, they are doing their job. We have Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan taking on Imperium, Fabian Aichner and Marcel Bartel. Really fun tag match for 5 minutes, Imperium getting the win. Yeah, when I was watching this, I kind of felt like Imperium, like Aichner and Bartel, like they remind me of like a foreign revival, if that makes any sense.
No, that does make sense.
Like, they are that kind of team. So I think they've got a lot going for them. I can see them being a really strong tag team for years to come.
Yeah, for sure. I loved this. It didn't last very long, and I could have used more of it. But at the same time, the fact that it was just kind of balls to the wall, super hard hitting, awesome stuff for 5 or so minutes was brilliant. I wanted Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch to win because I always want Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch to win. I think Imperium is less known to the NXT crowd, so I get it. I love both teams. I love Fabian Aichner and Marcel Bartel too. I've seen Marcel Bartel live, like, command a crowd for 5 minutes without saying a word. Like, the guy's great. He's incredible. So I love all of the guys wrestling here and would like to see them do some more wrestling against one another. Danny Burch is awesome too. Like, there were a couple spots in the match where I was like, yes. Because I think everyone focuses on Oney Lorcan because he has done, like, more single stuff, and Danny Burch has always just kind of maybe been a little bit more in the background. He is great, and I just adore him as a wrestler.
He is great. It was a fun match. I'm a big fan of Imperium. We had an interview with Johnny Gargano. He's talking about Ciampa and his history with him, and he doesn't know how he's going to feel until he meets him in person. So, you know, they're keeping that going, which is good.
I like the fact that they're teasing it and that they're not just best friends again for no reason, like,
which is good.
You know, they've had a little bit of an alliance based on common enemies, but there's still tension there, and I think there should still be tension there, and I'm intrigued by it.
Io Shirai, one of my favorite wrestlers ever. She's just such a badass. I wish that somebody could backstage say to her, see when Rhea Ripley comes out, let's take down the overacting facial expression maybe 10%, but apart from that, she is my favorite.
I love her.
She faced Caden Carter here, the former Lacey Lane from the Young Classic. Short and decisive victory for Io Shirai, but, you know, Carter got some stuff in. But the real talking point was post-match when she got the mic and said, not Rhea, not Bianca, Shayna. Rhea Ripley comes out and sort of squares off with her, said the next time Shirai puts Rhea's name in her mouth, she'll shut Shirai up too. And then Shirai kind of backed down and jaw-jacked with her a little bit and backtracked up the ramp. Adding another legit contender at the women's title picture is not a bad idea.
Not a bad idea at all. Also, Caden Carter is awesome, and I really love her, and I want to see more of her on my TV because I think she's real good. She's not, like, she hasn't been wrestling super, super long, but I think some of the stuff she was doing in this match reminded me of, like, Becky Lynch wrestling, actually. Like, she's doing the Matrix thing to kind of get out of holds and some of her, like, counters and stuff. I just really super enjoy. So I think that she is going to be an absolute star in the next few years, like, barring injury or backstage stupidity or anything like that. I think she's going to be really, really good. And I loved this match, and I loved seeing Io Shirai fight Caden Carter and have it not just be like an immediate squash, because Caden Carter did get to get some stuff in on her. That's kind of like, this is what I mean by NXT introducing people, not necessarily that they're going to win or, you know, be huge and on top right away, but they're introducing people that are important and can kind of work their way up. Right, which I think is an important thing to do. You have to have people who are on the rise. And Caden Carter is definitely on the rise for me, and I love her, and I want to sing her praises. And Io Shirai facing off against Rhea Ripley was like straight from my hopes and dreams, and I loved it so much. They're just both such badasses, right? And Io Shirai, obviously being a heel, you don't necessarily expect her to be against Shayna, but like I feel like anyone against Shayna Baszler is going to be a babyface at this point. And I just really want to see that confrontation again in this current Io Shirai iteration. I really want to see Io Shirai versus Rhea Ripley because that could be really good. And again, straight from my hopes and dreams of badass ladies beating the shit out of each other, I think it could be so good. I love everything about this. This is like made for me, basically. So I'm just giving it glowing praise because I love wrestling, even though I sounded so tired about it at the beginning of this podcast. Like, I really do love it, I promise.
We have Boa, the Chinese guy talking Mandarin, doing some shadow boxing, as you do. And then we got Keith Lee against Dominik Dijakovic. Are we still seeing Dijakovic?
Dijakovic, yes.
Regal just
didn't,
got it wrong.
Didn't Killian Dane beat up Boa again?
He does that later on in the show.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
Sorry, I don't have it in front of me. I just remember that it happened.
We got Keith Lee versus Dominik Dijakovic for the North American title. This is obviously their third match. Usually, I would say that in a rubber match that you really should be giving away a decisive finish, but I think given the Velveteen Dream situation that I think you can give them a pass on doing the finish that they did because obviously they kind of had to get out of that situation. They were in a sticky wicket. So the three-way, I think the three-way is probably a better idea because I think Keith Lee or Dominic on their own are probably not that big a selling point to like get people hooked into viewing, but both of them kind of makes you feel like Roderick Strong could lose the title because his odds are so stacked against him. So I thought it was a clever move for them to do the non-finish. What did you think of the match?
I think it's clever. Yeah, if this had just been their rubber match and it didn't have that stipulation of the North American title, then I would not want this to end in another countout because we've already had them have like a non-finish to one of their matches. I love the way that this played out, though. Like, I was actively angry at Roderick Strong, and it made me actively want Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic to beat the shit out of Roderick Strong, and they are both big, big, badass gentlemen. So if they can beat the shit out of Roderick Strong and one of them can take Roderick Strong's title from him, I would be very, very happy next week, Wednesday. That's what I want, and I'm emotionally invested in it. Like, I love watching Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic wrestle each other. I don't want to say like, oh, I could just watch them every week forever and ever because I don't want to speak those words into existence because this is WWE and then they will give me that and I will get tired of it. Witness Becky and Charlotte. But like, they're so good and they're so good at doing all these things. Like Keith Lee doing like moonsaults and stuff. It's ridiculous. Like he is a big man and he can do things that big men should not be able to do. And Dominik Dijakovic's the same way. So I think them against Roderick Strong is going to be a really interesting dynamic. And I think it's good that Roderick Strong has been such a dickhead leading into this, because otherwise it would be almost too easy to feel sympathy for Roderick Strong being the smaller guy against these two big monsters. But he's been so dastardly and just so annoying that I want him to be smushed.
Hulk is smushy today.
Aww.
Because he's tired. But yeah, this was, I really like the ending. I like the way they did it. Regal ends up telling, you know, Roderick Strong, who obviously was the one that caused the no contest, that, you know, his cleverness is going to mean he has to defend title against both of them. So it was good.
Because Roderick Strong thought, oh, I'll get out of having to defend my title by just not having a number one contender. Clever me, right?
Because he's never watched professional wrestling before when there's a babyface.
Exactly. GM. And also, like, if he attacked Dominik Dijakovic, wouldn't it just mean that Dominik Dijakovic wins the match by DQ and then he would be the number one contender?
Roderick Strong didn't think this through.
He did not. And he knows that William Regal does not like the Undisputed Era, so it's not like William Regal is going to be like, oh, I will give you a pass here. No, no. William Regal is a great general manager and has made decisions.
He has made decisions. Matt Riddle is up next, taking on Bronson Reed. Another kind of short, decisive victory for Matt Riddle. But Bronson Reed, in the few minutes that he, or the 3 minutes that he had here, showed that he definitely has some potential. So Matt Riddle's not really my kind of wrestler, but Bronson Reed intrigues me. So he's the sort of person I would like to see more from him.
Yeah, I would like to see more from him. I mean, I wasn't super crazy about him in the breakout tournament, but I think I was just annoyed about the Dexter Lumis situation. Yeah, this was fine. I sort of forgot that it happened, but that's because there's a lot of things going on, and it was fine. it gave Matt Riddle a win, and Bronson Reed got to be on TV.
Yes, happy days. So we then had, what was after this? We got a hype package for Bianca and Rhea Ripley next week. We got Tegan Knox.
So excited.
We got Tegan Knox against Tanara. And Tegan Knox came out to, like, I liked her music that she's got. I don't know if that was the music she had before. I wasn't crazy about this match, just more because, like, I don't really... Sorry, I know you love her. Tanara Conti just kind of is a bit blah for me. And Tegan Knox is somebody who I really, like, feel a vested interest in because she's had those really bad luck of injuries. So, like, I almost wanted more of a bang to her return. And it just felt a bit blah. Because it's not quite like a squash win, because Tanara Conti is somebody who they've had on the show enough that you know that she's supposed to be a character. So, I don't know. I'd maybe like Tegan Knox to come out and, like, kill her in 30 seconds. But I know that would not be good because they're trying to push Tanara as well. So, I don't know. I guess I wish they'd kind of... I wish that Tegan's return had been in another way that was a bit more impactful. But I'm looking forward to seeing what she's going to be doing going forward.
See, and I liked this just because I was happy that Tanara did get some stuff over Tegan Knox. It did seem like Tegan Knox was going to win. I mean, they've been doing hype vignettes for her return and all that kind of stuff. And they obviously have Shayna Baszler come out and confront her after. So they really want Tegan Knox to be a star in NXT, which is great. I'm a big fan of Tanara. I really am. I think she's put in a ton of work, and I think she's getting better and better and better every time we see her. She looks incredible. I love her throws. I love that she just has a different style of wrestling. And I liked that commentary during this match, too, highlighted that it would be interesting watching a judoka go up against someone like Tegan Knox, who focuses more on strikes and kicks and that kind of thing. So it was an interesting style matchup for me. It probably wasn't the most exciting match on the show. I don't think it was the best match on the show, but I mean, I enjoy the performers, so lots of goodwill from me, and I liked it.
Then after that, we had Dakota Kai comes out. She gives Tegan Knox a hug, but before anything can happen, Shayna Baszler and the Horsewomen come out. Baszler is basically kind of assuming that Tegan Knox is going to want to fight her as well. Baszler asks Dakota Kai what it's like to be in the ring with her. Tegan Knox kind of stands up for Dakota to Shayna Baszler, wants a title shot. Baszler says she hasn't earned it yet and asks her to come back when she does something to earn attention. This was good stuff.
This was great stuff. I loved this stuff. This is great. It establishes an alliance between Dakota Kai and Tegan Knox, which we know backstage is a thing, team kick, yay. But it establishes it on TV in front of a television audience, which is great. Shayna Baszler's such a dick. I want to see her get kicked in the face real bad. And it makes Tegan Knox important because Shayna Baszler herself has come out to confront Tegan Knox. Everybody else who's kind of already a star and already known to the NXT consciousness has confronted Shayna, and Shayna hasn't really cared, right? Like, Io has confronted Shayna. Shayna hasn't, like, cared to respond. Rhea confronted Shayna, and they did have a match, but, you know, Shayna didn't come out to, like, talk to Rhea again, right? Like, Shayna didn't come out to talk to Bianca. Shayna sought out Tegan Knox, and that immediately makes Tegan Knox feel like a bigger deal to me, which I think is great.
It is good. So, yeah, I really like the angle. I thought it was a pretty hot angle.
And I feel like all the contenders that they're presenting to us feel like they could legitimately be title contenders. This doesn't feel like main roster where they have five women just kind of circling in a pool and, like, I don't know, Lacey Evans is getting title shots every week. Like, all of these women feel like they deserve it.
Yeah, and Shayna's getting cocky because she's beat everyone. She's kind of rubbing it in everybody's face. And everybody wants a title shot because the title means something. So it's good. So the only other thing on this show that I was like, are you serious? Is, like, they advertise going into NXT and they advertise on the episode that we're going to hear from Finn Balor tonight. And us hearing from him was a video saying, I'll be here next week.
Yeah, that was pretty ridiculous.
Like, well, and because the thing is, see, again, I feel like, I'm not saying you can do what you like, but, like, I feel like when we're watching these shows and they're on the same night and they're going head to head, it's a little bit different in terms of what you're presenting. So I feel like you can't really, if you say Finn Balor's going to, you know, explain why he's back tonight and then it's a video saying he'll be here next week, like, there's another show people can turn over to. So, like, people's time is quite precious to have. And I just didn't really understand why they did that. It just felt quite... And I have criticism of the AEW show, but yeah, it just didn't make any sense to me. I was like, Finn Balor, to me, like, if I'm watching this show, he's one of the top three people I want to hear from. I want to hear what he's got to say. So I just didn't understand it. Because what was he say? He said, my future will be my past. And he's going to be here next week.
Yeah. Because next week he's actually going to come to Full Sail, which I don't know. I guess it didn't really bother me the way it bothered you, because I just wasn't really thinking that hard about it. It was like, we're going to hear from Finn Balor. And then we did. Like, we heard a video package from Finn Balor that was not really entirely dissimilar to the video package we saw before. It was a great video package. And I think it's interesting that he's like, I'm kind of returning to my roots and my future is going to be my past. Like, I have to go to my past to, like, forge my way into the future. I think it's cool. I would like to hear from him in person. I would like to see him live in person.
I think it's all fine. It's probably better to not promote on social media and during the show we're going to hear from Finn Balor tonight, because people are going to think they're going to hear something.
Yeah.
If you're going head to head, because again, it's not a problem if you're not, but if you are, then it's probably best not to sort of peeve people like that. Mm-hmm. But he will be there next week in Full Sail. So
yes,
that's good. Up next week,
and the video package was great, I thought.
It was good, yeah. It was good. We got Killian Dain versus Boa. Obviously playing off the attack from last week. It was a sort of short 3.5 minute match. Killian Dain gets the win. Boa did get some stuff in there. Boa, talk to me about him. Do you see potential? Do you not? Are you excited by him? Are you not? Talk me through your thoughts on him.
He seems fine, I guess. I don't really have many thoughts about Boa. He's fine. He could be good. I don't know. I haven't really seen that much of him. I mean, like, he got to get a little bit of offense on Killian Dain, and that was cool, but I can't say that he's someone that's grabbed my attention.
I guess we will, yeah, I guess we'll see.
I don't know. Do you have any pressing Boa thoughts?
He's dull? Is that a thought?
All right.
I mean, sure. Well, because it's like he's not, there's nothing, like, Killian Dain, I mean, I know who he is and stuff, but, like, if I didn't know who he was, I'd be like, oh, big bastard from Belfast that wants to kill people. Mm-hmm. I'm in. But with Boa, I'm just like, he's not seemed in any way excited to be here yet. Like,
not really, no.
He looks like he's waiting for a bus.
A little bit, yeah.
You know.
He's fine.
He is absolutely fine, and I'm sure he fits the quota of what they want. You know, because, I mean, I've not seeked, and this is a genuine question, I'm not saying this with any sort of, like, shade. I'm sure, because, so, OWE is a Chinese promotion, right?
Yes.
They're a Chinese promotion. There's nobody in OWE that they could have signed that's more exciting than Boa to have a Chinese athlete. Like,
I mean,
Boa is the most exciting performer in that country.
I don't think that Boa is the most exciting performer in that
You'd
country.
You fucking hope not, Sandra.
Yeah, no, I'm going to go with no. But, you know, was he a wrestler before?
Let's Google him. What do we know about Boa? Boa wrestler. Has he got a Wikipedia page? Okay, what do we have here? Okay, he doesn't have a Wikipedia page, but he has a pro wrestling fandom page. Big Boa. I really hope that's his name. Yanbo Wang is a Chinese pro wrestler currently signed to WWE, where he works in the NXT brand under the ring names Big Boa or simply Boa. Boa is a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He was named the 2016 Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu China Open G/No-G champion and represented China at the 2013 ADCC Submission Wrestling World Championships.
Cool. So he's a wrestler. I mean, I just feel like they haven't really presented much about Boa yet.
Apparently, right? He was one of 7 Chinese athletes to train in WWE Performance Center in 2016. He was the one that they signed. He's been doing a lot of stuff in the house shows. There we are. That's what we know so far.
All right. Well, good for Boa.
I hope
we see more of him and he grows and flourishes and becomes more interesting. I just, you know. He's fine.
If he doesn't one day get a feather boa as part of his entrance, what are we even doing here?
Right? I'm just saying.
If my name was
necessary.
Boa, day one, I'm going out shopping for a feather boa.
Obviously.
So anyway, we're going to be seeing... we got a promo from Leo Rush saying he's the greatest cruiserweight in the world right now. But he was, you know, he was doing a babyface promo, so we'll see where that goes.
It's still just very jarring to me to see Leo Rush as, like, this nice babyface boy, but, like, that he's doing it well. Like, it's working.
I feel like it's the same thing of, like, you going, I don't trust that Vince is a babyface.
It kind of is a little bit, but
You're
like it's working more with me for Leo Rush because I think that like Leo Rush, they've explained it away as kind of like, well, he's had a change of heart and he did some self-examination to like better himself while he was away and all this stuff. Which considering some of the comments that he was making about WWE, like the fact that he needed to have some self-evaluation to get over it is kind of problematic from a WWE standpoint, but whatever. But yeah, like it's working, it's fine. It's just it's weird because he was such a piece of shit. Like when he was with Bobby Lashley and when he was doing stuff before, he just seemed so incredibly annoying and irritating. But I think it shows his strengths as a performer. Like he can do both. He can be a babyface and he can be a heel, and he can do both very well. It's just they really want him to be likable because they even had the treatment after he won the Cruiserweight title. I'd forgotten that he went backstage and all the people were congratulating him, right? Like everyone backstage was like, "Yay, Leo Rush, you've vanquished the Big Bad Drew Gulak and you are our champion now, and we're so happy to have you here." And it really does feel like a rebirth of the Cruiserweight Championship. So it's interesting. It reminded me like when like this isn't a reference that'll resonate with you, but like when Doctor Who goes from season to season and when the Doctor regenerates, and sometimes they just need to have the Doctor regenerate and have new companions and like start over completely the way they did with like Jodie Whittaker or when Matt Smith took over. Like they want to cut off the past of 205 Live and the past of the Cruiserweight division, and they're like, we are starting fresh and this is our new start and this is where we're going. The Cruiserweight title has regenerated.
There we go. I mean, I need to see more before I get excited about Leo Rush, but we'll see. He's trying. He started his babyface run, so we'll see where it goes. We get the advertisement of next week. We're getting Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair in the North American Championship three-way, which brings us to the main event. Pete Dunne versus Damian Priest, and they, big props to them. They gave Damian Priest the big win here, and they put him over Pete
Yeah.
Dunne, which is very important, I think, given that you're going head-to-head, you want to be creating new people. And they gave Damian Priest a big win. I think if Pete Dunne had won here, it would have been a. As much as I would have preferred Pete Dunne to win, because I'd prefer Pete Dunne, like, I think Damian Priest needed to win this, because he's your new guy that you're trying to promote. So I thought they had a really good match. I think it's hard for Pete Dunne to have a bad match. Priest has got some potential. I hope that we can keep getting more vignettes from him and build the character more. But I thought the match was fun. What did you make of it?
I thought it was really good, really, really good. And yeah, Damian Priest getting the win. This was interesting. Like he did get the win by kicking Pete Dunne in the dick. So it wasn't just like completely clean without shenanigans win, but he still got a pinfall victory over Pete Dunne, which is a big deal. Like remember when Velveteen Dream pinned Pete Dunne for the North American Championship and I was like, "Oh my gosh, he pinned Pete Dunne. That feels bigger than pinning the actual champion, right?" Yeah, this is very important if you want to make Damian Priest a person. And they're really trying to make Damian Priest into a big star. And I'm not someone who was familiar with Punishment Martinez before. So it's important for people who didn't see his previous career to like see him as a player. I thought the match was great. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. So it seems promising. Like Damian Priest is very good at wrestling, and I think he does have a charisma and he has an aura about him. Pete Dunne is an established commodity in NXT, and I think that it is good that they want to build other stars and not just stick with the same established commodity who's kind of done everything. So, and which is so weird because Pete Dunne is so young and it feels like he is like the veteran of NXT at this point. But he was champion for so long that he feels like a big, formidable opponent, and Damian Priest beating him was a big deal. And I don't know, there was just really great stuff in this match. I enjoyed it. Wrestling-wise, it was right up my alley, as most Pete Dunne matches are.
Do you? I ask because you're such a big NXT fan. Do you think so? With the ratings kind of going down slightly, each week, do you think there's anything that WWE or NXT can do to pull any of those fans back? Do you think that it's just kind of like they're part of WWE and there's so much WWE stuff going on that people just don't want any more WWE? Like, is there anything from the shows that you think they could do any differently to sort of pull any more people back from 2 weeks ago? Why, what do you think?
I mean, I honestly think a lot of the live rating stuff might be because NXT is available on demand. Like, I would be really, and I don't think WWE will release these numbers, but I would be really interested to know how many people are watching NXT on a Thursday when it airs on the network. I don't know that there's much I can think of to make people watch live. I mean, putting title matches on every show, which means you're going to burn through title contenders like crazy. I really enjoy the show as it is. Like, I don't want it to change a significant amount because I think that what they're doing is working and it's working very well. And they're maintaining a pace that they can keep up without burning through everything right away. So I think, honestly, it's probably having to do with, like, the access. And I know a lot of people who will watch AEW first because they want to support the new company and they want them to succeed. Whereas NXT is going to be fine, right? Like, even if NXT doesn't beat AEW in the ratings, it's still doing fine. And if it's still getting decent numbers on the network, like, it's still a valuable commodity to WWE. So, like, I don't know. Like, and I'm the worst one to know what's box office anyway, because box office is not for me. I don't know, like, them being in Full Sail, I agree with you that that makes it feel smaller. I don't know if that's a detriment or an asset to them at this point. I don't know.
I think the thing I feel about the current NXT format and the way they do everything is fine to, like, keep that amount of people, but I don't think it'll grow unless it changes a little bit. And I'm not saying change in, like, a mad way of, like, you know, making it like Raw and SmackDown, but I do not want
it to be like Raw and SmackDown.
But I feel like they're, you know, like, if they put out, like, I'm trying to think when my favorite period of NXT was. Probably, like, 2016 WrestleMania time NXT. Mm-hmm. Like, if that was on USA, I think that they had, I think a lot of the characters were more box office, like Nakamura and Finn Balor and people like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would have been better, but I don't know what they do. I think if they take it out of Full Sail, that will help, because then it won't look like it's in the exact same place it's been for 5 years or 7 years. I think that'll hopefully give it a bit of a facelift. But, you know, we talked about that the other week. I would put it in that low place where, you know, I think it was Thursday, Raw Thursday, you think it was Samoa Joe won the belt.
Uh-huh.
Like, venues that size, like, I would say do that. Like, don't, I heard that they might go to like 5,000 seater buildings. Don't do it. You're not going to fill 5,000 people every week. Raw, SmackDown doesn't fill 5,000 people every week.
Yeah, so go to, no, like, they don't. And one of the things I noticed talking about the comparison with AEW and NXT, like, AEW being in the bigger arena, I don't think it's just the bigger arena that makes a difference with AEW. I think, like, the crowd was so much more invested in AEW as well. And I think that that's maybe because Full Sail sees NXT every week, and these are the same people that see it every week. So even though they're excited about it and they're invested in the show and they're definitely not detracting and they're not sitting on their hands or anything, there's not that, oh my gosh, I've never gotten to see this live before kind of feeling that you get when you travel.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I mean, AEW is also the new thing, so there's that. But yeah, I guess we'll see where things go. So let's move over to AEW. Overall, I'm guessing it's thumbs up for NXT.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would give the show about a 7 out of 10 if I was rating it out of 10. But I thought it was a good show. AEW Dynamite was in Philadelphia. They opened the show with the Lucha Brothers attacking SCU. They attack Christopher Daniels and give him a pile driver on the ramp, knocking him out, which meant that Scorpio Sky had to take his place in the tournament match of SCU against Best Friends. I love the touch that Scorpio Sky was not dressed for in-ring competition.
Yeah, and he had to, like, get out his athletic tape and all that kind of stuff.
So, you know, it's a nice wee touch.
And he wasn't wearing a shoe?
Well, he had both shoes at the beginning, and then he lost one of the shoes, and then somebody threw a shoe back at him. There was a whole shoe situation.
And then at one point when the shoe got thrown back, then the ref moved the shoe, and they were like, hey, he could have put his shoe on.
They just didn't think. They didn't think about the man's shoe. Yeah, so we got SCU against Best Friends. It went about 10 minutes. I thought they had a really good match, but unfortunately, the finish, like, I don't think they botched it. I think they did the finish they intended to do, but it did not look good. It was like Kazarian had, I think it was Trent Barrett up for a powerbomb, and then the idea was that as the powerbomb was coming down, Scorpio Sky would go in and do like a sliding dropkick, but it just looked like he missed something, even though he didn't.
Did kind of look like he missed something. I mean, I really liked the match, though, and Best Friends still have my favorite entrance video in all of wrestling, with the ghosts and the aliens and the dogs hugging and the hand-holding. It's my favorite thing, and I love it. I don't know. I really enjoyed this. Hearing Best Friends get cheered in Philadelphia was awesome. Like, Chuck Taylor put out a tweet yesterday about how he's lived in Philly for 8 years, and this is basically his home, and it was really nice to see him get to be in front of a Philly crowd. I think because I follow so much of like Chikara and Northeast wrestling Twitter, like this was a really cool show for a lot of those people. Like Bryce Remsburg getting to referee this show where, like, you know, he's worked before and that kind of stuff was just really cool. So I was bummed to see Best Friends lose. I was not surprised to see Best Friends lose. I love Best Friends. I love that they hug in the middle of matches. They're great. SCU are also great. And I thought the beginning taking out Christopher Daniels. Is Christopher Daniels injured or something? What's happening with that?
No, I think it was just an angle.
Okay. I mean, it was an angle that worked, so I'm not mad about it.
Yeah, I mean, Scorpio Sky came out of this show a star. People mm-hmm. loved the guy at the end of this match. They just really took to him. I mean, he's always kind of looked like he is going to be the star of that group because he's obviously the younger guy and he's just kind of got this charisma about him. He's also a very attractive man, which doesn't hurt.
He is a very attractive man. I mean, I really enjoyed this. And this tag team tournament has been a lot of fun so far, I think.
It's been good. I mean, I still, like, my head hurts at the idea that we watched two teams wrestle for a bye, which means we watched the first round match.
Yeah, that's a little bit baffling. I didn't really see much of that match, to be honest. But... yeah, which was a bummer, because again, love Best Friends, love them, but I really needed a Pepsi.
But it was a good opener, really good opener, crowd were hot for it, Scorpio Sky, you know, huge moment for him, but the whatever that was they did as the finish, I think they kind of had to, they need to get rid of that move. Because
well, I mean, what I liked about it was that they took out, because was it Trent was on the outside and Chuck Taylor was on the inside? Did Chuck Taylor get pinned or did Trent?
It was Trent who got pinned.
Trent got pinned. So Chuck Taylor was on the outside. And what I appreciated about it was that they were making sure that Chuck Taylor couldn't get back in the ring to get to Trent, right? To break it up. Because there was obviously these two teams have worked together for so long that there are a lot of tag team moves and like wanting to save your partner and that kind of stuff. So that's what they were going for. Like it looked like he was taking out Chuck Taylor so that he couldn't get to Trent so that Trent could be pinned. And that worked for me. But it's just the execution of it was a little weird, which happens. Wrestling's hard.
Sometimes when you do a move, it sounds good in your head, and it just doesn't work in execution. So, we then had, though, Santana and Ortiz coming out to face, I was going to say jobbers, but then I always look at your Twitter during shows that have any people.
The Beaver Boys! The Beaver Boys were on AEW!
Do they love vagina?
No. They're John Silver and Alex Reynolds, and they're great, and I love them. And they were on WWE.
Explain Beaver Boys!
This year.
What does that mean?
That's what they're called.
Why are they Beaver Boys? Do they like beavers the animal? Do they like beaver vagina? Like why are they Beaver Boys?
I don't actually know. I just know who they are. And I like them.
I'm a big
John Silver fan.
I was so excited to hear the explanation of why they're Beaver Boys, Sandra.
But I don't know. I can't like make something up. I haven't followed their career for like a very long time. I don't know how they became the Beaver Boys. I don't know like
do you think for
the
next,
history of the name.
Do you think for next week you could find out why they're called Beaver Boys?
Could find out why they're called Beaver Boys for next week.
There you go. So Santana and Ortiz beat the Beaver Boys. In 2 minutes. Santana and Ortiz are like, they're obviously heels and they're in the inner circle, but they're so cool. Like, they drip coolness. Just
they're
their
great.
Look. They're like, they're so good. I don't even care they're not called LAX anymore. They're so cool. And then they challenge after the...
Can they not call them UIFBO?
Call them what?
UIFBO.
What does that mean?
Wasn't that their other name?
I only ever knew them as LAX.
Oh.
But then they challenged the Young Bucks for full gear. That is going to be a match.
Because, yeah, like, EYFBO is what they were known as when they came to Chikara. So I just Googled it to make sure. I'm like, I am talking about the right team, right? Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know if that's, like, copyrighted by someone else or if they just want to be called something else. I'm not really sure. Yeah?
EYFBO sounds like a children's song. EYFBO.
Honestly, I'm here for Santana and Ortiz doing children's songs. I think that could be brilliant.
Let's do it. Let's just get it. Yeah, that's fine. But yeah, so Young Bucks and Santana Ortiz at the pay-per-view should be fun. And I think that Santana Ortiz will probably give the Young Bucks a different style of match, which I'm a fan of.
Yeah.
Any further thoughts?
I don't know. I think they're great. Like, they're wonderful. They're very good at wrestling. I don't really have many more thoughts than that. I was happy to see John Silver and Alex Reynolds as well.
Then we got a video on Cody Rhodes, which was fucking incredible. That video about just kind of, because the thing is,
and it also undercut the main event, but it was really good.
But it's very hard to, like, I can't really explain this because you still have to watch Retro Raw stuff. The reason this worked for me is because I've watched a lot of times where, like, because the thing is, if they have Cody and Jericho booked as their, you know, in storyline, booked as their main event, then that is the match that they are promoting until otherwise. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't mind they aired that video, and there's a big thing that happens in 2000 in WWF where the title's involved and there's some stuff and there's a big pay-per-view match coming up and then something happens, and April 2000, everybody, if you're wondering what I'm talking about. That kind of, I mean, that's not what's going to happen here, but so I'm kind of okay with that kind of stuff. But I think what they did that was clever here was that Cody being like one of the EVPs is difficult to make you feel sympathy for him or to make him feel like he's like the, you know, he's a worthy contender without being like, I put myself in that match.
Right.
But I thought having like Brandy and DDP and his mum and JR and all these people talking, it really worked for me. And I don't know whether I'm just biased because the Cody character has worked for me in AEW so far, but I thought it was a great video.
It was a great video. Like, it was a really great video. My only issue is that it seemed very much like, of course it's going to be Cody and Chris Jericho. Like, of course that's going to be the match. And I almost would have preferred if it was like, it's going to be Cody versus whoever is the champion. And that's just like a nitpicky thing. But the video was brilliant. Like, I think having everyone talk about why Cody needs this and why this is so important to him and how, you know, like, he needs to prove that leaving the other place was worth it, I think was one of the lines in the video. And that's interesting, right? Like, they don't mention WWE by name, but they say, like, he needs to prove that him stepping out and doing this and taking this big risk on himself was a valid risk to take. And I think that's, I don't know, it was really well done. It was super, super good.
Then from there, we have Britt Baker versus Rio for the AEW Women's Championship. I did like the touch where they kept her black eye. They kept Britt Baker's black eye as part of the story.
I think maybe JR wasn't the best one to explain that because bless his heart, but he's just like, I mean, I was in the makeup room, don't laugh, ha ha ha, but they did this. And he just, I don't know, JR commenting anything about women is just very cringe sometimes. And he's trying, I know he's trying.
I thought he came across fine when he was talking about it. I thought he actually put over pretty well. Because he was putting it over and he was kind of explaining the Bea Priestley thing. Like, I don't know, maybe we just heard it differently. I thought he sounded fine, but I guess maybe not.
I mean, it was okay, but it was just kind of like, you know, oh, just the tone in his voice when he's talking about, like, the makeup room and, like, well, don't laugh because I was in the makeup room or whatever. I don't know. There's just nitpicky things about JR that, like, he gets a tone in his voice when he's talking about women, and I don't think he knows he does it, and he comments very differently when it's women in the ring. And I think he's gotten better over the past few weeks because I think he just doesn't know how to differentiate and just like call things as wrestlers.
Anyway, we got the Rio and Britt Baker match and there was sloppy parts to it. I think that Britt Baker is not like, I see when she had the was it the triple threat match at All In initially?
Yes.
Right. I didn't like her in that match. I was like, this is not very good. But then I really liked the four-way at Double or Nothing. And I kind of thought, well, maybe she's... I like Britt Baker, and I like her character, and I like her look, and I like her in principle. But I don't know, like, because she's like obviously one of their big stars, and they want to really push her, but like I feel like she isn't quite there in the ring yet. And I think what's maybe going to be a struggle is, like, I mean, how long has Britt Baker been wrestling? Do you know? Is she...
I don't actually know. I mean, I found that I like Britt Baker live in smaller venues more than I like her live in larger venues.
Because
I saw her at Shimmer, and I thought she was phenomenal.
I think she debuted in August 2015, so she's been wrestling 4 years. But, like, I think that she's the sort of person where, like, she probably needs to be, like, wrestling 4 days a week at this point. Like, mm-hmm. out there going for it. So hopefully they can maybe, like, allow her to take loads of bookings and stuff. But I like the match. Like, I really like the match. And I really like Riho. She works for me. I can imagine that if I had, like, a little sister who was, like, 12 or 13, that they would, like, love Riho. Like, she's a really good representation for, like, a market that doesn't really get hit a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I really loved her... her strategy at the end to when she was getting when she applied the lockjaw thing, which the finish of the match. I really liked the finish of the match, and I think she's got good potential. But yeah, I mean, I like I said, I like Britt look a lot. It's just the execution leaves a lot to be desired. What do you think?
I feel like I like most things on paper about Britt Baker, and like I said, I've seen her, you know, live in a small. Really like that. She's great. I think Britt Baker is still finding her character. You say you like her character. I don't really understand her character. Like, I don't really understand who she is other than is a dentist and wants to win. That's kind of it for me right now. And I get why they want to push her because they can be like, hey, she's a doctor and that's pretty cool. And she's a stunningly attractive woman and she is quite good. But I think in interviews and stuff, she's just not been that compelling to me. And I think that's probably part of why I haven't connected with her as much. But I mean, I think she's good. I just don't know if she's like top of the card good for me at this point.
I don't, like, it works for me that she's kind of like this dentist who's like a professional and she does that on the side and she's trying to make it in this career as well, but I think the problem is that they're positioning her as if she's like really established,
yeah.
But she's actually a lot like she's not that. I mean, Nyla Rose is very green, but she's got mm-hmm. something about her. But like Britt Baker is pretty green as well. Like it's not hugely different between the two.
Yeah.
Of them. So
yeah. And the thing, like, coming out of this match, I really liked Rhea a lot more though, because I haven't really connected with Rio that much, I guess, just because, like, I mean, I haven't paid as much attention to AEW as I have to NXT just because there's so much wrestling. But I thought Rio looked great here. Like, I really, really liked her. And it was interesting them talking about, like, Rio as the veteran and she's like 19 or whatever. Or she's 20. How old is she? 22?
Let me just check. Rio is.
I mean, she started wrestling when she 22. Was like 9.
Yeah, 22.
Yeah. So, I mean, talking about, like, having tons of experience, she does have way more experience than Britt Baker. And so they were like, yeah, that veteran instinct kicked in and helped her win, which is crazy for this 22-year-old person who's, you know, tiny but so, so likable. Like, she just does have a very likable quality about her, and you want to see her win. And I think that actually hurt Britt Baker here as another babyface contender, because anyone against Rio, like, you don't want people to beat Rio. You want Rio to win because she's adorable and smiley, and why would you want her to lose her title? Then she would be sad. Right? I don't want to see a sad Rio. It was fine. And I think it's like logistics wise, it makes sense that Britt Baker would get a title match because she, you know, she was the first person to win a match at, you know, at, did she win the All In one? Is that?
Yeah, she won the Triple Threat All In. Yeah.
Yeah, she won the Triple Threat at All In. And so she's like, I have wins and things behind me and I should be getting a title match. I think that she is valid to say that. But I'm glad she didn't win the title, because I think Rio as champion is good.
I would agree. Then we had the Lucha Brothers. So this is the match that kind of divides opinion online, so I'm curious to see what you think. The Lucha Brothers taking on, it's supposed to be Jurassic Express, Jungle Boy, and Luchasaurus, but Luchasaurus has an injury, so he was replaced by Marco Stunt, the other member of Jurassic Express. The match went a fairly long time. It was like 10 minutes or so. But in the end, the Lucha Brothers got the win by sort of killing Marco Stunt with a package pile driver. What did you make of the match? Stunt is obviously someone who kind of divides opinion with a lot of people. Did the match work for you? And if so, why? And if not, why?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was phenomenal. It was 100% the sort of thing I want to see. I'm a big Marco Stunt fan, unabashedly. I am super biased. I think he's great. I love this because people, of course, are going to see Marco Stunt and Jungle Boy come out and they're going to be like, they're dead, right? Like, Pentagon and Phoenix should absolutely murder them dead. And one of the things I love about watching Marco Stunt wrestle is he's so good that even though he is a tiny, tiny person, he makes you believe that he can hang. And he just kicks out of stuff, right? Like, he has so much heart that he's like, no, I'm not going to give up and I'm not going to let you kill me into the ground just because I'm small. I'm going to be victorious. And he was not victorious here, but he lasted a lot longer than anyone thought he was going to. I thought there were some really fun spots. I thought at the beginning, you know, Marco kind of like dancing at Pentagon and then doing the Cero Miedo thing and Marco biting his fingers and being like, no, do not disrespect me. Just because I am small does not mean that I am going to just be killed and like nothing. He's not a jobber. Like, he is a player here. And I love Marco Stunt and I love Jungle Boy and I think he's great. This match was 100% up my alley. I thought it was brilliant. I could not love it more. It was my favorite match on the show. Yeah, so that's how I feel about it. I do not think you feel the same way.
I liked it, which is strange. Yes, but I liked it for a very specific reason. Like, I think that Marco Stunt as a character only works, like, he should never be body slamming and getting major offense in on, like, Pentagon. But if you play it as he is this tiny man who can, like, because the stuff that they did, I felt it was... realistic is a weird word, because some, I think it was Luke Owen actually did a great tweet that I want to read out, which was about like realism, because that's kind of been the argument today of Marco Stunt. And he said, where is it? The wonderful discourse about the believability of Marco Stunt wrestling bigger guys really highlights how brilliant wrestling fans are. Him being small is a problem for a lot of people, but the fact he tags with a dinosaur isn't an issue whatsoever. It's just funny.
No, but that's true, right? But, and that's the thing is, like, I think the way they played it in this match was exactly how you should play a Marco Stunt match. Like, they play it seriously, but they don't shy away from the fact that he's small. Like, they're not trying to pretend that he is the same size as everyone else. They're trying to use his size to his advantage. Like, the way that Jungle Boy was, like, throwing Marco Stunt onto people, or they're doing a lot of tag team stuff where, you know, he'll throw Marco onto someone and then he'll do a Hurricane Rana, or, you know, he'll body slam Marco onto someone and basically use Marco as a weapon, or like they're using each other as weapons. I think that's brilliant, because that's kind of using the fact that he's tiny and throwable to help them out. And that's offense that you don't expect, because you don't see it very often. So it's very hard to prepare for.
And if you book him like that, I'm in. And I think that's the best way to book him, to kind of make everybody enjoy it. So people are fans of him, they can enjoy it. If people who don't, who like, because I think it's all kind of relative to what the match is. Like, for example, after the show went off there, like, Cody was pinned by a kid dressed as Orange Cassidy. I don't have an issue with that, because that's a gag after a show. Like, it's not like it's not a match. Do you know what I mean? It's not a match on a pay-per-view or on a TV show. Then I would have a problem. And I think that sometimes people get like, sectioned into these debates, right, of like, you either have to love Marco Stunt or hate everything he stands for. You can't have a middle ground opinion, or you have to, you know, hate any sort of child being involved in anything. I don't want a child involved on the show in matches, but like, if you're in the building and the kid's dressed as Orange Cassidy and like Cody wants to get, did you hear how it all played out? That, like,
I have no idea what you're talking about, so no.
So in the front row there's a kid.
I mean, I remember seeing the kid dressed as Orange Cassidy.
Okay, so post, after the dark main event with the 8-man tag, basically, Cody invited the kid in the ring and he lay down for the kid, and like, MJF was like screaming at the kid going, you better not do this, and like, MJF had to be held back from the Jacksons.
That's so adorable. Like,
but it's a funny skit, and it's off camera, it's off air, and it's just in the building. Fine. If a kid is like pinning, you know, a guy on a pay-per-view, then I'm not a fan of it. I think it's stupid. But that's fine to have that. They're different things. So like with Marco Stunt, if Marco Stunt had come out here and been like, you know, doing offense that is not in any way, because if we're meant to believe it's like some of it's realistic in a sports element, then I play it up as Marco Stunt being the size that he is. Don't pretend that he's not. So they played,
yeah, that's
played
what
up
they
here.
Did here. That's what I loved about it so much.
They played it up, yeah. So I think they did a really good job here, and the Lucha Brothers got the win, which the way it should have gone. And they scrambled at the last minute and had to put, because this was obviously going to be Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy, and at the last minute they switched them out, and I thought they did a good job with it. So
yeah, and I mean, it was a completely different match than it would have been with Luchasaurus in it. And I think Luchasaurus, like, I would have loved to see Luchasaurus in this match, because I think he's great. I think it almost, I don't know, like, I love Luchasaurus and I think he's phenomenal. I'm really kind of glad that Marco Stunt got this opportunity to kind of show what he can do, because you don't think of Marco Stunt, like, comedy character Marco Stunt going toe-to-toe with Pentagon, but he did, and it worked, and it was really just really great. And I like the fact that, I think, was it Phoenix took out Jungle Boy so he couldn't get to Marco Stunt, kind of similar to the Best Friends SCU match, where, like, they wanted to make sure that the pin wasn't broken up, that Marco Stunt was put out of his misery.
Yes, yeah, that was the finish. So I thought it worked. I thought it was really good. I am giving it all the props I think it deserves. And if people, I know Cornette hates it, but it's like, do you really think Cornette's gonna like it? Like he's just, but like leave the guy alone. He doesn't like something. I mean, but then he's not really helping himself by now doing like doing a podcast every week reviewing the two shows.
Good Is God. He really?
Yeah, I'm just like, if you don't, just don't listen to him. Like, just use your.
Well, I don't. So
not you. But you know, the people who it's like there's people who I just have no interest in listening to what they say, so don't listen. Anyway, up next we get the tag match with Kenny Omega and Hangman Page taking on Jon Moxley and Pac. Pac ends up taking his first pinfall loss in AEW because Moxley wants to use a barbed wire bat, and Pac stops him and throws it away, and then sort of shouts at Moxley. Moxley hits the dirty deeds on Pac. Storms off, and then Paige and Omega have the 2-on-1, hit their finishes on Pac, and get the 1-2-3. What did you make of the match and the decision to have Pac take the first pinfall loss here?
I mean, having Pac take a pinfall loss is not the biggest deal in the world. It's interesting. I don't know. Again, like, this is that box office match that I'm like, oh yeah, this was fine. This happened. This is probably the thing I'm supposed to be most interested in. But I was so excited about Marco Stunt and Jungle Boy versus the Lucha Brothers that I was just kind of like, I'm done. I'm ready to be done watching wrestling right now. It's 4 a.m. I liked it fine. It was interesting dissension between Moxley and Pac. Obviously, they weren't going to get along. They're not friends. I like to think that Moxley was like, why can't I use a barbed wire bat? I interfered in a match before and there was no disqualification. The refs around here do not care. So that would be continuity for me. I liked the fact that Pac was like, don't get us fucking disqualified. That's not cool of you, partner. So, the dissension came from a place that is understandable. And Kenny Omega and Adam Page are obviously going to be more friendly to one another because they're both in the Elite. They both are friends. So it worked for me fine. It was fine. I just don't have that many feelings about it, I guess. This is not the story that is gripping me.
I thought it was fun. I thought they did a good job of keeping the Omega Moxley stuff going. I thought it was really good to see Hangman Page get a win. And get to finally. I also really love the little kind of scorecards they put on people when they come out, like their singles, tally of wins.
Yeah, like their win loss records. I think that's cool.
And then their overall one, that makes sense. And I think Pac has an out because, you know, his partner left him. Now we're going to get Pac and Moxley next week. So
yeah, and I don't think it really hurts him to get pinned here when his partner, like, A, hit a finisher on him and B, left. So it was a double team of two people who are, you know, probably way better at working together than Pac and Moxley should be.
Yeah, for sure.
That's logical. It's fine.
Then the main event is Chris Jericho versus Darby Allin in a Philadelphia street fight for the AEW Championship. I'm going to get out of the way. The thing that frustrates me is I think they need to figure out the refereeing issue a little bit, because why we're in a street fight, because I'm assuming a street fight means there's no DQs. Really?
Yeah, which I didn't realize it was a street fight until like halfway through the match.
Okay. Because I didn't realize it was a street fight until Justin Roberts announced it at the beginning of the match. Before that, I don't think they'd said it. Maybe they'd said it on social media and I just didn't see it. But like, the thing, because at points, like, they were allowed to use all the weapons and all the stuff they wanted, but then there was like a rope break and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's just stuff that, like, it's not the end of the world, but it's stuff that, like, just fix it. And then people won't, you know, wanky. It's like when I do a show, right, if I'm doing like a live Inside the Ropes show and I'm like running 5 minutes late, I know 99% of the people will be fine. I know there's that one prick in the corner, I'll be like, they started 5 minutes late. So I almost work for that one prick in the corner because I don't want to have that prick online sort of slating it. So just work for the pricks in the corner as well and just make sure that even these kind of tiny nitpicky things that are so... Or even maybe...
Like not using an ampersand and a hashtag? Oh my gosh. It was Mox and Pac versus Hangman and Omega or something was like supposed to be their hashtag during the tag match. And I was like, you can't use that as a hashtag. It doesn't work.
Well, the thing that... Like even if they wanted to do the thing they said, look, in AEW... a street fight is not no disqualification. Like, a street fight means you can use weapons, but rope breaks still apply. Like, tell us the rule.
Yeah, have the rule, commentary explain that.
Like, have the rule, and then that's fine. Just tell us the rule, and then we'll know where it goes. But I really enjoyed this match. I thought that it reminded me of, like, 2000... I'm not going to say who, because we're watching Retro Raw, Like in 2000, Triple H, when he's the champion, like would work with babyfaces, like mid-card babyfaces, and really like make you think that he was going to lose. I mean, I know that's really shocking to think that Triple H did that at one point in his career, but we are going to get to it. And that's kind of what Jericho was doing here. Jericho sold for Allen. He made it seem like he was being challenged, and it wasn't just like a. Because the thing is, like, Jericho is the biggest star on the show. If he came in and just beat Darby Allin, like, Jericho still remains the same, and Allin's not got anything. Whereas, like, Darby Allin, he went to a draw with Cody, and then he almost beat Jericho if it wasn't for Jake Hager coming in. So, they really made a star out of Darby Allin here, and I don't know. It really worked for me, and it was really refreshing. It felt kind of different to what we see a lot in sort of national pro wrestling. So it worked for me. How did it work for you?
It worked so well for me. I loved this. Like the Lucha Brothers and Jungle Express match was my favorite one on the show, but this was like a really close second. And I think this was like the best thing objectively, but I just love Marco Stunt. This was great. And this just did more to cement Darby Allin as such a star. Like, he is so good and he is underestimated. And I think that, like, his part of his character is being underestimated, right? Like, no one thought he was going to beat Cody. And he didn't technically beat Cody, but he didn't lose to Cody either. And that was shocking. And he looked at times that he could absolutely take on Chris Jericho here. He looked like he belonged with Chris Jericho. They made a fucking star here. And I think that's awesome. And I think it's great. And I think that that's what more wrestling companies need to do. This is something that the WWE main roster does not do. I mean, I guess they try with like Jinder Mahal or someone, but they try with the wrong people and they just don't seem to get it. And Darby Allin connects with fans and he connects with the crowd and he's just so good. And I think it's great that Chris Jericho is willing to do this too. I think it's, you know, Chris Jericho gets it. He knows that he is the biggest star, but he also knows that there need to be more stars in future. And Darby Allin's great for that. So I loved this. I couldn't love it more. I thought they worked really well together too. I thought the match itself was very compelling.
And apparently, like, I've not watched any Darby Allin stuff, but apparently in PWG he used to do the tape behind the back thing. So it's like, It's one of his things. And like Jericho, I mean, like, Jericho didn't need to incorporate any of his shit into the match if he didn't want to. He could have just done what he wanted to do. He's Jericho. He's called that in his career by now, but he didn't. He let the younger guy do his shit, and it looked. I think in WWE, a lot of that is not that the wrestler wouldn't want to do it. I think it's more just like the company saying no. Mm-hmm. You know, like I bet you, like, Undertaker probably would have let Bray Wyatt do so much more in their WrestleMania match, but, like, that was not allowed. But that was not the way it was going
to
be. Well,
I think that's a testament to AEW letting the wrestling breathe a little bit more, right? Like, it feels more alive than main roster WWE, which is so sanitized and so produced and shiny and micromanaged and all that kind of stuff, that it doesn't feel like it has life a lot of the time. And this felt like it had life. And for Darby Allin to be able to, because, like, I was confused because I didn't realize it was a street fight. So when weapons started being used and when, like, tape was coming out, I was like, what is happening? It must be no DQ because Aubrey's sitting right there. And JR actually did have a good call there where he said, you know, and I think it was as Chris Jericho was taping Darby Allin's hands, he said, and the referee in there, and she's a damn good one, can't do anything about this because it's a street fight. So she can't disqualify Chris Jericho. And I thought that was a really good call. First of all, because it let me know that it was supposed to be no disqualification when I hadn't paid attention to Justin Roberts earlier, which is on me. But also, like, pointing out that it's not the referee being stupid in this instance, right? Like, there just was nothing that could be done. Because, Darby Allin was just at the mercy of Chris Jericho having the tape. And, I mean, the amount of time that Darby Allin was able to fight Chris Jericho with his hands behind his back, I thought was brilliant, too. And it didn't look unbelievable, and it didn't look like it was hokey or anything like that. It was really good. I mean, it reminded me of when Orange Cassidy wrestles with his hands in his pants, and it really works because it's presented in a way that works, right? Like, I loved it. I thought it was great. Darby Allin, like, diving through the ropes with his hands behind his back, crazy. He's a crazy person.
Well, we need to wrap up because I need to take a business call in like 30 seconds. Sandra, very quickly, I thought AEW was also a thumbs up show. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Loved both shows.
Excellent. What are the plugs, very quickly?
Okay, find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for bonus content, including our overrun, including lots of other stuff. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content. There's some Bret Hart stuff out there already from the tours. And InsideTheRopes.co.uk for tickets to live events. There are currently tickets on sale for Mick Foley and Kenny Omega.
Indeed, indeed. So to play us out, we will play... Let's play Chris Jericho's theme tune, because he put Darby Allin over a shit ton, and Darby Allin's theme tune is not as good as Judas. So we have to put that
Judas
one.
Is kind of a great tune. That's fair. Great.
We'll be back with the Overrun on Patreon. Thanks for all your support. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Personified, and I will track you down and sell you out. Run.